Good morning, everyone. You are listening to WMFO in Medford. This is DJ JD Acker, and this is Don't Make Me Dance. I'm so happy to have you all here, and I'm going to have a guest on the show this morning, assuming he makes his way over. And I'm quite excited for the rest of the semester and season, because I have 11 shows left, including this one, and my goal is to spend the rest of my time here reflecting on what is absolutely most important to me, and that is community. So I'm going to have various guests on my show for the rest of the semester, some bloodline related and some friends and perhaps some professors or professionals as we go along, and a mix of the few. So keep on listening to WMFO in Medford. I'm going to put on a jazz track. We have mostly instrumental coming on today, and I'm going to start with I'm going to start with this track that I just think is incredible. SF Jazz Collective is just this amazing jazz group out of San Francisco, hence the SF, and they do cover albums and their own unique compositions. Most recently, they released an album completely dedicated to Michael Jackson. So I'm going to play their rendition of Smooth Criminal and hope I can get in some good talk, some good walk, some good talk about community, ritual, and intimacy with Alex Golan. And you can catch his show on Tuesday nights at 11 p.m. It's called Headroom. And he's also been with me here in the station for 4 years. So looking forward to all of that. Stay tuned. You're listening to Pharoah Sanders. You've Got to Have Freedom off Journey to the One. And before that, you had SF Jazz Collective, as I mentioned, Smooth Criminal off their album, doing the music of Michael Jackson. So guess what? He's here, he's here, he's here. Cheers to Alex Golan. Say hello. Hello and good morning.
How are you doing? I'm doing very well. How are you today?
It's great, great, great to be here. Great to be up.
It's great to be up. It's actually, this is the first time I've been up on purpose before 9 a.m. in a while, and it actually feels really good to start the day, like coming to the radio station. I don't think I ever understood morning shows until right now.
Well, you know, you have to say that in my presence. You can say whatever you want on your own time, but I definitely agree with that sentiment, and so you're talking to the right person.
Yeah.
I had mentioned it in my preface before you walked in the room, but I'm really interested to hear about your reflections on Tufts in the context of community, mm-hmm. ritual, and intimacy. Mm. And if that has to do with WMFO specifically, that'd be awesome. But I guess we can start with general thoughts and move into the details as we can pluck them out based on what you're thinking.
That's a big question. And I think it's something that's changed a lot for me over the years as I've spent more and more time at Tufts and like found my community more and more and had a larger role within my communities. For example, when I came to Tufts, I came from a high school where I was already going to school there for like 13 years from kindergarten through senior year. So my community was well established. I was part of the theater community. I had a very tight-knit group of friends. And everything was based around common interests and commonalities. So my sense of community was pretty strong when I came here. So it was definitely jarring to lose that. And when I came here, it was pretty shocking to see how a lot of social bonds were forming. And it was over things that I found kind of superficial and boring, like going to a party or like all having the collective desire to get so drunk you can't remember something. And like, I know that was like kind of a specifically freshman year thing, but it was shocking enough to me coming from a place where like, we would talk about the, albeit nerdy, but like thing, you know, all the things that we were like very interested in. So I like pretty quickly started just going off and doing my own thing. I started going to concerts on weekends and just kind of like not telling any of my friends where I was going.
Mm-hmm.
The fortunate thing was that like my friends, and part of like my branching out and doing that was part of what helped me realize that the group of friends I was living with and becoming closer with was an amazing group, and I'm really fortunate to have them, and like we've stayed as close as ever through 4 years and only have gotten closer. It's amazing because it's almost the opposite for me in terms of like friend community. We have almost nothing in common, me and my friends, on the surface level. They hate the music I listen to. I can't believe they put up with my practicing in the house. It's so obnoxious. Like, it's so, ugh. But they put up with it. And I think, like, weirdly enough, they, like,
what do you play?
I've been working on some Defeater covers right now, which is, like, Boston hardcore.
Okay.
So I've been practicing a new type of hardcore vocal. Instead of, like, a deep growl or a high scream, it's somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the loudest. So
and mostly electric, or...?
Mostly electric guitar with a lot of gain and distortion. So about as loud as it could go, and unpleasant for people who don't like metal.
And what about your neighbors who don't love you as much?
I haven't asked them.
Yeah, okay.
They haven't complained to me yet.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think they know it's me, so I would hope that someone would have, like, called me out on it.
Yeah.
I keep my windows closed. My room is surrounded on all sides by my own housemates, so
right.
I try my best.
Yeah, you're insulated. Cool.
But I think I definitely started realizing that I liked my independence more and more, and I knew that about myself when I was younger, but it just became more and more pronounced at Tufts. And at the same time, though, I definitely was feeling this desire to get involved in something a little bit bigger than just, like, going off on my own and going to a concert. So I remember, like, right away I joined WMFO because it just seemed really cool.
Yeah. Did you know about it before coming here?
Yeah, my mom and I had, like, talked about it when we were visiting Tufts in, like, my junior year. She was like, oh, check it out, the radio station. And, like, of course, I was, like, Mr. Angsty Junior who, like, had been on 3 college tours in the last day and was just like, yeah, whatever, Mom, whatever,
yeah.
You know. And then, lo and behold, like, I've spent most of my time here. But, yeah, I got my show and then sort of accidentally ended up as music director And I was really psyched about it because I care about the station and what the station's goals are, ranging from freeform to music to community or whatever. But the thing that was frustrating for me was when I came on, there was no semblance of community.
Right. And what was the music director's role in the past?
All I can speak for is the person who came before me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of unclear to me. It was passed down from a senior. It was a person who was a senior passing it down to me as a freshman. And if you could imagine, like, a senior is kind of busy and might not, like, take all the time to sit down with the freshman and teach them.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of catch-up that I had to do. God bless Joanne. Oh, my God.
Joanne.
She's a star.
Has her show on Monday morning. She does Celtic Dawn. Between the Worlds.
She's amazing. You got to
8 to 10 a.m.
Listen to her show. But yeah, it was mostly like learning how to process new music. And that mostly came from CDs. So it was literally just like, all right, so this is how you troubleshoot this piece of crap equipment that we have to keep buying to like batch process CDs, where most of the CDs won't even get ripped because people who put them out haven't heard of something called metadata. And like, there were just all of these issues. And it was,
yeah.
I came in and was like, I can't believe this is like what somebody's role is. Like, there's so much more that I think could be happening. There's no reason we should be fixating on these CDs and this terrible piece of like Japanese equipment that keeps breaking and would, like, is no longer even being manufactured,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I was kind of like, all right, how do we get rid of this? How do we cut down? So I started by trying to just make the procedure a little bit easier so that I could start focusing on other things. So I wanted to make it more digital-based, like MP3-based. I wanted to move away from the reliance on promoters and stuff like that, because at the end of the day, that's not what we're about. We're not about getting ratings or making CMJ happy or making Terror Bird happy. You know, it's about like what the students and the community DJs want to play.
Yeah. Do you feel like you got a good sense of that, or you get a good sense of it on campus through groups like Apple Jam, which hosts bands on campus, or Midnight, formerly a similar group, or how did you move from being independent and developing a very distinct taste freshman year and going off on your own and enjoying that to then trying to satisfy the demands and work with others,
yeah.
I guess, in the station and with the larger community?
I mean, I think the most important thing to me as somebody who loves music, like, aside from the number one rule, which is, like, love and respect music always, like, it's keep your mind as open as possible to all types of music. You know, I think I was literally just talking with somebody about this, like, when people start feeling as though they're experienced in the music industry or whatever, it's one of those places where I feel like you immediately start to see ego rear its ugly head. You see it in the station and within certain members of the community, you know, who've been embedded in the music industry for long enough. And there's almost like this sense of entitlement or like my, you know, condescension or something. And I really think that it's important to remove that sense from any of this kind of community fostering.
Yeah.
Because I think the most important thing is that we all realize if you just keep your mind open, you might learn something that you love. Or maybe you won't, but it might help you in the other direction. Like, there's something to be gained from the entire discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And more important to me than the music itself is like what the community is getting from it. So, I mean, I'm not much of a hip-hop head. I really am not. But,
yeah.
like, I've been super advocating for more hip-hop shows from Apple Jam. Because, like, quite honestly, yeah, I listen to a lot of the same, like, white boy indie rock stuff that they get, like a lot of...
Yeah, it's a taste.
For. They get a lot of flack for it. And, like, I listen to it, too, but...
Does the indie rock community have something similar to jazz, where it's if someone is doing something unoriginal, or you think that they're, and dance has this as well, certain gestures, you'll have something where you'll bang your forearms together horizontally, like make an equal sign and then go up and down, and that's called biting, and that means your stuff sucks and it's cheap and lame and copied, and then, you know, jazz musicians will call people jive, and if someone's called jive, you don't ever want to play with them again, otherwise your own
right.
reputation. And then we were talking about, I guess I was talking with a friend about this idea of express versus impress thing in music, and
I was thinking about that yesterday, actually.
Yeah,
too. Yeah, I was.
I mean, I feel like that's a part of it. Like, do you keep the community tight, so it requires a very high barrier to entry level passion and knowledge for it, and it becomes this kind of maybe a circle jerk.
Right.
Or is it, you know, and then alternatively, the stuff that you're talking about, the hip hop, maybe some of the pop music is more just about feeling good. And Kenny G, you know, people probably listen to Kenny G more than they listen to jazz, the rest of the genre. Jesus. I don't know.
You're probably right, which is, you know.
So I don't know. How big can a community be? And is it better to spread out and be open, and to what extent? All of that stuff I find interesting, but.
I mean, I think community is very much like an organism in and of itself. You know, like, everybody kind of comes together in this weird symbiotic kind of relationship, and it's like a living, breathing organism that changes over time. And that's something I really became aware of with the station, because it was just so utterly different when we were younger, when we were like freshmen and you and Hunter and I came on board. And I just remember like sitting around, and there was very little like warmth or invitation for us to become a part of something, or feel like we were doing anything other than our task. And that really bummed me out, and I just so specifically remembered that, and was like, you know, I'm never gonna get that experience. Like, I knew about myself when I was younger. Like, in freshman year of high school, I would hang out with the seniors. Like, I always kind of liked doing that. And I kind of wanted to do that again in college. And then it kind of didn't really happen, despite the fact that, like, I was in two groups with pretty much only seniors. There was no effort on their part to foster a space for people to hang out or talk about anything. Yeah. Or it was just a friend group kind of being cliquey.
How do you think you've done that at Tufts?
I mean, what I've tried to do is actively keep in my head. I don't think it started in sophomore year, because I was still a little bit too young and like entrenched in like, this is my story kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as soon as I became a junior, I realized, like, you know, to hell with my story. Like, that's not a thing, you know. It's the best I can do is make as many people enriched as possible, or feel enriched, or feel, you know, content with what they have. And for me, you know, you could choose any number of groups to do that with. I think, like, in any way, like, that tends to be like a pretty nice thing to do, and I like that idea. For me, it was the music community at Tufts.
Yeah,
because I saw if I didn't do that, it would start dying. Because I was the only one left in a booking club, literally the only one left, to the point where, you know, we, even after a year of trying to get people involved, like, there just aren't enough people involved in the community.
Yeah.
So we merged, and now there still aren't enough people, and I'm still hauling all the gear all by myself and running sound all by myself.
Right.
So.
And I don't know, do you feel a sense of martyrdom when it comes to stuff like that?
I feel a sense of deep frustration towards those who express an interest in being involved in this and tout their, I'm like, oh, I'm so on the in of this thing, and then you're not going to show up and help do the basics. Like, all you want to do is show up and get drunk at a show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not DIY, man. DIY means you do it yourself.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So.
I mean, drink it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like, you know, it's like, I think it should be like, you get what you give, you know.
Yeah.
And when that gets out of whack, it starts being a little uncomfortable, you know.
Right.
But I guess in my opinion, yeah, there are ways, you know. I think that gets back to your question of like, how big do you make the community?
Right.
And
the bigger it is, the more kind of oversight needs to happen,
right,
in order to make it inclusive. You know, you need to say, oh, well, even though they don't contribute, we want to include them because they're nice, or they're trying. And there are these unqualified measures that people start to apply, and you're giggling because you know who I'm talking about, but it's very interesting. And so I guess I'm going to take a music break now, because I also have to hit the head, but we'll be back soon. And I want to touch on, I guess, this balance of, yeah, we have the struggle between optimal size of community, but also then what habits or what level of closeness can you establish within a community, and how do you maintain that once we wave goodbye?
Once we peace out.
Yeah. So I'm going to play some more jazz, and then we'll get back to it. But you've been listening to Don't Make Me Dance with DJ JD Acker, and it's about 9:29. Weather supposed to hit perhaps 50 today. You see people without hats. That makes me happy. And we'll be back soon. So this is The Bad Plus. That was a tune that I found on iTunes, God forbid, using iTunes, an album that my old piano teacher, Stephen Mars, had recorded. And so he did his own version of Quanto Ostinato, section 88F. I Shazammed it because I have no clue. I have no clue who the original composer is, but he did his own rendition, so that's fine enough. And I'm back with Alex, and
hi.
I guess I wanted to start by asking if you could tell a story about a time when you felt really connected and intimately connected to the Tufts community, if it's been through music or through somewhere else.
To the greater Tufts community,
or it could be your own.
I've never felt connected to the greater Tufts community, not for a second, quite honestly.
Okay.
From the moment I was accepted and saw the Facebook group to my exiting months watching people bicker over how to handle fraternities, I do not feel connected with the majority of, like, the Tufts community. However...
Is it because you don't want to engage with those issues, or...
It's because...
You don't...
I mean, I think the issue of fraternities at its very core is trivial, and, like, the only reason that we can't just get rid of them is because it's a thing, and if we got rid of them, there'd be reaction, like, reactionary behavior, which would be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But quite honestly, if I'm being... Like, this is the whole community thing. For me, there's a reason to build a community. It's not for the random sake of having community. It's the same thing we were talking about the other day in terms of, like, is a relationship worth having just for the sake of having a relationship? Or is it, you know? And my opinion is, no. Like, everything is, like, putting a label on something doesn't make it something important.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a load to me. So calling a fraternity a community is a load to me. Because what do they have in common? They're all white men, and they... are exclusionary and, like, you know, talk about women in objectifying manners. All right, cool. Like, that's a great community bond, you know?
Right.
Like, and maybe I'm simplifying. Like, I get it. There, you know, they all do various, you know.
Yeah. I guess why do you think people
service,
choose to subject themselves to habits or processes like that, where they're continuously subjecting themselves to verbal abuse, to either alcohol abuse, whatever it may be, to different forms of extreme and damaging behavior? What is that?
I think it's a mix of things. I think some people have a tendency to view, like, different people have a tendency to view different things as dangerous. I'm sure people would view certain of my habits very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The same way I view some very probably normal habits as, like, irresponsible, you know? I think what causes people, like, to me, what I think is the root of, like, why people feel the need to go out and rush. When I was, like, watching my freshman peers go out and rush and, you know, come back belligerently drunk, and I would just be, like, a little high after a concert or something. It was a great sociological experience watching these people.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it came down to insecurity. It came down to, like, vestigial traits of our evolutionary process, which says that we need to be community-based creatures.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I think the fact that we're, if anyone's raised to believe that you can't be alone, that being alone is wrong, I think that's the source of a lot of problems in society. Because I think so many people end up in relationships or friendships just because they do not want to be alone. And like, I just would so much rather spend the energy, like, figuring out what to do with my own alone time than I would want to spend the energy, like, working on a BS friendship or something. You know, and I see friends, some of my friends, like, they maintain friendships with people that just abuse them.
Yeah.
I'm like, why do you do this?
Because we've been friends forever.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know what? It's just kind of like, okay, that doesn't make sense. Like, that's like saying, you know, like, take away women's right to vote again because they didn't used to be able to vote. You know what I
mean?
It's like,
I've had this talk with Elizabeth, my roommate, about this this extremely high value placed on loyalty, and I don't feel that at all. But some people, it's like once they invest a part of themselves in something, it's like, especially, and it's not even with activities. I don't see it with activities little passion projects or something. You see it with people, the sense of I've already shared, I don't know, some story about my family or something with them, and now they know me, so we're hooked. I don't know.
it seems like you've definitely like been bothered by the concept of like loyalty on a like person to person basis. So I wonder what you think of like, what do you think of loyalty on like a philosophical level though? Cause I guess like, I don't know, like let's take like my relationship with Hunter, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like you remain naturally kind of philosophically loyal to your ideals, you know, but when something like that departs, you're not being not loyal to your friend by like bringing it up and having a conversation about like why maybe you disagree, you know, like, so I guess like if it's a personal loyalty, then yeah, you're like being disloyal to them by coming head to head with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think most people want to be challenged. I think I have an acute sense of that though.
That's so dumb. Yeah. What's the point of living then?
Yeah. Like, but I mean, especially seeing my grandma Jane as she gets older too, being, you know, seeing with each passing year developing, we all develop narratives about ourselves and what we believe about the world.
Totally.
And it only becomes stronger with time.
Yeah.
And I feel that sense of closing, you know, even as this chapter at Tufts closes, I feel my values and my ideas and my identity closing to a certain extent. And I think that's healthy because it keeps you from spiraling into existential crises every week.
Well, yeah.
Which, you know, is totally us, regardless. Like,
we're going to do that no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. But, I don't know, loyalty. I think, it's probably more nurture than nature when it comes to what values or ideas or principles I feel loyal to. One of them being a morning person, you know?
There you
Something
go.
As simple as that.
Just, and for me, like, I literally got in an argument with my family about, like, why are you scheduling everything for 7 a.m. when you know very well I can't fall asleep before midnight, you know? And so, you know, it's like, it's one of those different strokes for different folks kind of things,
mm-hmm.
but to just arbitrarily be loyal to like a person, even if you are best friends with them, like, I don't know. That's just, it seems like that's just somebody asking for an excuse to never be wrong in the eyes of somebody.
Well, I think it's also an excuse to never question, when it's time to move on.
Mm, true.
It's much easier to just hold on and hope that the other person gives up first. Like, you know, like an arm wrestling competition, you're just waiting.
You're not actually pushing anymore. You're just trying to stay upright.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's just counterweight, and then you hope the other person just lets go, and
that's
you're
really
free.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, I think people get really freaked out about change and, like, you know, separation and distance between people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know. I've actually found that leaving high school has been one of the best things to happen to my high school career, because it really made me realize, like, these are the people I like to hang out with, these are the people I'm fine with seeing once a year, and these are the people I never need to see again. And
yeah.
I am A-okay with that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great. Well, let's see. We have to do a PSA before we go, and while I peruse through the binder, I guess I'm also wondering what else is on your agenda for the week. Do you have any plugs, or even for the rest of the semester, things you're doing, things you're excited about, things that you want to share with our listeners?
Let's see, this week, not a big week, I don't think. Let's see, big plugs, I guess, would be keep your eyes peeled for another Apple Jam concert in March, and then also remember we're going to be throwing Spring Thing, I think it's like fourth annual, maybe. Spring.
It's only the fourth.
It's pretty new, I think.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's so much fun.
I'm not actually sure. It might. I can't remember. I'm getting confused on my years. But keep an eye out for Spring Thing. It's going to be Spring Fling, but better, because it's going to be, you know, genuine music with people who genuinely love music,
mm-hmm.
and don't just want to get sandwiches for a big name artist with $200,000.
And the rumor is that it's going to be 3 solo R&B. People.
I don't even actually
know.
Two
lesser known headliners co-headlining, and one opener
for
Spring Fling.
And
they're going to release that on March 13th.
This year could be good. Apparently Concert Board's picked up their slack this year. So
let's just talk to Alex Mitchell about that. Yeah.
We'll see.
So yeah, that's it. I'm going to be performing at Parade of Nations this Saturday evening at 7 p.m. in Cohen Auditorium. If you're looking to see a bunch of world dance forms and some break dancing on my part. Come on out, free tickets. Just show up to the auditorium at 5 minutes to, like any good college student, and you can see some dance. Otherwise, I also am really excited. One of, I think they're only doing 15, but maybe 20 showings in the U.S. of this dance film, Mr. Gaga. Ohad Naharin is one of, no, probably the most famous contemporary choreographer, dancer, composer in the world. He's from Israel, and his dance ensemble, the Bat Shiva Dance Ensemble, has inspired so many people, and he created his own form of movement called Gaga. So that's what the film is going to be about, and they're doing a showing in Newburyport on Sunday evening at 5 p.m. There's a little wine and cheese reception, a showing, and then afterwards they're going to do a Q&A with someone related to the production of the film. And I think the last time it showed at Sundance, and then it also showed at the largest dance film festival, Dance on Camera, in New York City in early February, that first weekend in February, the 3rd and 4th. So it's,
that's really cool.
Well, yeah, it's really cool that it's coming to Newburyport, Massachusetts. Yeah. And I was kind of mad to see that they weren't doing any showings in the Midwest. But yeah, regardless, it's time for a little quick PSA. And then after this, we have music you may otherwise miss with TK. Thank you all for listening. And yeah, I'll probably be able to fit in maybe two more tracks after this. So, no matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule one, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule two, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule three, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Guns are dangerous.
That's ridiculous. The four rules, but instead of numbering them one through four, they start with zero.
Huh.
I wonder if that's philosophical or purposeful.
Maybe.
It seems like it to me. Anyways, okay, I'm going to play a track by a Brazilian artist who was in the City of God soundtrack, and I'll see you all next week at 9 a.m. Thank you for being here with me, Alex.
Thank
it's been
you
a pleasure.
For having me.
And thank you for being a part of my Tufts community.
Same to you. Same to you.
Great. All right. Stay tuned.
Não estou disposto a esquecer seu rosto de vez, e acho que é tão normal. Dizem que sou louco por eu ter um gosto assim, gostar de quem não gosta de mim. Jogue suas mãos para o céu e agradeça se acaso tiver alguém que você gostaria que estivesse sempre com você. Na rua, na chuva, na fazenda ou numa casinha de sapê. Jogue suas mãos para o céu e agradeça se acaso tiver alguém que você gostaria que estivesse sempre com você. Na rua, na chuva, na fazenda ou numa casinha de sapê. Não estou disposto a esquecer seu rosto de vez, e acho que é tão normal. Dizem que sou louco por eu ter um gosto assim, gostar de quem não gosta de mim. É.
Jogue suas mãos para o céu e agradeça se acaso tiver alguém que você gostaria que estivesse sempre com você. Na rua, na chuva, na fazenda ou numa casinha de sapê. As mãos para o céu e agradeça se acaso tiver alguém que você gostaria que estivesse sempre com você. Na rua, na chuva, na fazenda ou numa casinha de sapê.
WMFO in Medford. Good morning.